Worshipful brethren, brethren all, welcome to Freemasonry in 7 minutes or less. In this episode, we will be discussing Newton's Temple of Solomon. Perhaps no other Englishman has had a greater influence over the minds of men than that of Isaac Newton, the co-discoverer of the calculus and author of the Principia. There has been no greater single contributor to mathematics or science. But there is a lesser-known side to Newton, one that may seem blasphemous to the scientific orthodoxy, one of an alchemist, mystic, and Bible student. Writing over 1 million words on alchemy, Newton wrote fluently on the subject. Writing on the nature of the philosopher's stone, Neptune's trident, Mercury's Caduceian rod, and the green line, with the fluidity that you would expect from the owner of perhaps the world's largest alchemical library at the time, consisting of some 169 books. Aside from alchemy, Newton was a fervent Bible student, paying particular attention to King Solomon's temple. In one of his publications, The Chronology of Ancient Kingdoms Amended, he devoted a whole chapter of 6 to it, entitled The Description of the Temple of Solomon. A scan of this book can be found on archive.org, and I would urge listeners to examine its contents, particularly the picture of the temple. Newton felt that just as the writings of the ancient philosophers, scholars, and biblical figures contained within them unknown sacred wisdom, the same was true of their architecture. He believed that these men had hidden their knowledge in a complex code of symbolic and mathematical language that, when deciphered, would reveal an unknown knowledge of how nature works. As Newton was so important to the early days of Freemasonry, Brother Earnshaw, could you please speak on how this interpretation of the temple would have affected our interpretation of it in the Lodge?
Yes. So, first of all, Newton is not known to have been a Freemason. And in fact, he said that he wasn't a clubbable man. He didn't enjoy clubs and meeting people like that. So he was a very private individual. I wonder if his interpretation of what King Solomon's temple looks like is had any influence on the first three grand masters. I feeling it doesn't. I've written in one of my books about this, Freemasonry Spiritual Alchemy. I believe that they relied upon Newton for their understanding of alchemy, because the first three grandmasters weren't alchemists. And secondly, two of them worked with him on a daily basis. They met him, so they would have known him. And so it's quite possible that they went to him for advice on alchemy. But about the size and shape of King Solomon's temple, I'm not sure. There is a translation of Josephus's book, The Antiquities of the Jews, which actually gives the dimensions of the church, of the temple. And that doesn't align with what is written in the Bible. So Josephus would not have seen the temple, but he was living at a time when people still had memory of it. So perhaps his description of the temple is probably closer than that written in the Bible. I'm not quite sure. It's a difficult subject. the information in 2 Kings chapter, I forget which one it is, chapter 16 perhaps, of the temple doesn't give much information. Josephus gives tons of information about the doors and where it was situated, and for example, like how many columns and there were, and there were only 160, and
not
14,000 exactly. You know that. So where that number comes from, obviously, and in my book, I speculate it means something else, but. I am not quite sure.
I think this is just
this is one of the key topics to kick off Masonic research, because if you have a look at Isaac Newton's drawing of it, it's almost square. It's very odd compared to anything you would have seen before. And how he's come to those opinions, he obviously was a genius. He was obviously a very clever man. So for him to have come to that conclusion, there must have been some kind of train of logic, faultless logic, for him to come to that opinion. But Josephus is also a suspicious character when it comes to writing history, because he was the great turncoat of Judea.
Yes.
He was the Roman state-approved Jew, so to speak.
Yes.
So he was the equivalent of an Iraqi, I suppose, writing for the Americans after the Iraq War. So it's the equivalent of Saddam Hussein's brother writing the story of Iraq for the American government. So you're only going to get the approved story in there. Nothing's going to be contrary.
And maybe. I think that he had a lot of pride in his, Josephus had a lot of pride in his culture and the details.
Very true.
And for example, all the rules that they had about avoiding contamination of the temple. It's very interesting detail. Very interesting. I enjoy reading Josephus.
Yes, he's certainly some author that everybody should pay close attention to. It's interesting research in the temple. Yes. And his works are enormous. They're very, very, very well expanded upon. It was certainly an eyewitness to some of these events.
And of course, the book is free on the internet. So
absolutely, yeah.
There's no.
I have. A complete works of Josephus, and it only cost me £30. It's an enormous book. It's absolutely enormous. So there are bargains out there to be had. And that was brand new. I bought that off of Amazon. So you can pick up
for our American audience, what is £30?
Well, that'll probably be about $42 or maybe under £40.
I mean,
bucks, so not
£32 is 30 pounds, yes?
£30, yeah.
Yes.
So in dollars, probably a bit under $40.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Good.
Yes. Free if you go online.
Exactly. A lot of people in Newton's time were actually studying Hebrew so that they could study the Bible in the original language. It's the length that they went to be accurate, and it's very interesting. I doubt people do that nowadays. I wonder.
No. Thomas Hyde, somebody we've spoken about previously on the podcast, he was fluent in Hebrew, Persian, Malay. Absolute genius polymath. He even translated the Persic version of the Bible. I mean, that's pretty incredible, just to gather some further insights, just a few snippets of information.
Yeah.
An enormous.
When he was in the equivalent of high school, he translated Latin directly into Persian.
As you do when you're
of course you do. I mean, yes, well, yeah, Brits are known for their intellectual capacity.
Absolutely. Goodness me. Yeah, well, I think when I was in primary school, I was reading the Beano.
Yep. Yes. What was I?
Well, anyway, that just about brings this episode to a close. If you have any questions, please email on the link below. We're now Path on the Square, and we will meet soon. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.